live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook. And I'm excited to be back doing the Celebrity Show after being in Hilton Head, South Carolina for 2 weeks. But you got to go to my Facebook and check out the experience drive home. It was not the fun experience, but I'm really excited about this experience. So I want to welcome the program, Celebrity Mariah Huck from Married to Medicine. What an honor to be on the program, especially with the success of the show, to take the time to come on. So thanks for calling, Mariah.
Thank you for having me.
We're excited to talk to you, and I think when I was talking to you off air, I see that basically how this story developed, how you came up with the reality show in general, was based on, I guess, being a fan of the Real Housewives. Because I loved when I heard that, because again, that's something my wife's got me hooked into, especially Jerseys, and I'm gonna get into Miami's because I've interviewed Leah, but and I wish I could get to catch up with DC, but it's very interesting that how projects develop based on enjoying certain programming. So tell us a little bit about that story.
Yeah, it did. You know, I can't lie. You know, like, I've always been a huge fan of the Housewives franchise. I think that they embarked in an area that people weren't used to seeing in terms of reality. So the Real Housewives of Atlanta producers came to me and, you know, offered me a position to do the show. But my husband and I felt like the medical component was truly missing from that show. And from that, we birthed Married to Medicine. You know, we came up with a concept and, you know, did all the casting just amongst our circle of friends. And we just pitched it until someone really just, you know, paid us some attention.
You got to keep knocking on doors, don't you, Mariah?
You do. You have to be very persistent, especially in the entertainment field. Are people who really take the time to listen and hear you out. Because I pitched to everybody from Russell Simmons to Stan Lathan to, you know, just everybody. That's what I did. I woke up thinking about the show, and I went to bed pitching the show. So, you know, I was just very, very persistent.
And then were you finally surprised once you finally did get picked up and then you were on Bravo? Were you surprised by this? Because, again, it's a process. You put it in the TV vault. You do all those different things. And I know people that I learn more and more about reality television now that you have to have a production company interested in you. Was it a surprise when it finally happened, or you just knew that this was a great idea?
Knew it, you know, and I know people. I know that sounds weird, but in my heart, I just felt like it was a phenomenal concept. With the success of the medical shows like Grey's Anatomy and Private Practice, I just felt like our show could truly go into the personal lives of doctors and the families of doctors. So I just knew that it was something that people needed to see, because everyone has a doctor, and when you think about it, you don't know much about them besides it's your doctor, because, you know, they're so sterile and we're used to them being like robots. So I thought people needed to see the personal side and needed to see the sacrifices that are made for a lot of doctors to be doctors, you know.
And I think that's what made it different than the other Real Housewives brand or other reality television shows, is it really got involved in understanding people and the relationships in the medical field, understanding a lot of times that wives of doctors, it's a different story. It's an interesting situation, because again, there's a lot of sacrifice at the beginning, isn't there, Mariah?
Yes, it is. It really truly is. I just think my husband did 6 years of residency because he's a double licensed physician. And I had, you know, I was the person. I held down the fort. You know, I did medical devices. I was a journalist. I had a six-figure income. And, you know, it was a lot, because he was going to take care of someone else's children when our children was homesick, you know. So it was a lot of sacrifices. You know, he missed a lot of birthday parties, anniversaries, but it was for the greater good, and I knew that he had a bigger purpose to serve. So I think it's definitely worth it.
And a lot of times you guys are left alone raising the children, not having and really trying to find your own self, and it seemed like you already had a career, so that was okay, but it becomes very lonely at times as well, right?
Well, that's a lot of, that was the other reason why I wanted to do the show, because you do come somewhat like a club with the other doctors' wives, you know, you do because the husbands work such crazy shifts that you have to have, you know, confidants and, you know, comrades. So I truly believe that that was another purpose for the show, because you almost form like a doctor's wives club, or you have this community, you know, within the medical world. And I think that you need it because you need to talk to people who speak your language.
Because they have no idea what they go through every day. Kind of like with how I'm able to relate to my wife. Well, my wife's a school teacher, and I was a former school teacher, that I understand the daily trials and tribulations they go through as a teacher. Certain professions are and she's a kindergarten.
Yeah, it requires so much.
It truly does, because when they get home, they really don't want to talk about it because of the stress involved in it and all the different things. They want to kind of veg. And in other careers, you know, there could be a lot of conversations. And then I guess the hours are challenging as well. So you do have to have that group together. Were you thinking that? Here's a question to throw at you, based on, you know, coming up with the idea and everything. Did you think that through these relationships and getting these doctors' wives on the show, that there was going to be some conflict, kind of like the Real Housewives brand? Or did you think it was going to be?
To be honest with you, I had no idea we would have more drama than. We had a crazy season, you know, it was just a crazy season, because, you know, I thought that we were better than anybody else, because I didn't, but I thought, you know, we're all educated women, you know, everyone has a degree, and all of us pretty much have our own kind of careers, or with the exception of one of us. And so I thought that, you know, most of us are mothers. So I did think we had drama, but I think that the drama would have parameters, but I was wrong. When the cameras come on, it doesn't matter what people's titles are. It's just something different. And that happened even with me. So, you know, we're all human.
Well, I had a conversation with Mary, because I'm good friends with Mary Ammons from D.C., and she thought, oh, you know what, there's not going to be as much conflict, because D.C.'s different than the other Housewives brands. And you probably thought the same thing as well. But through reality television, relationships get, the closet comes out in certain ways. You learn more about people through this TV show, and in a lot of ways, and the producers are very good at doing that. And I guess for you being the creator and producer, you're kind of looking for a little drama sometimes, aren't you?
You know what? Drama is good. I always say a great show consists of a few things. You need great characters. You definitely need people with a lot of charisma. And you need conflict. I mean, I do. I think people like comedy. I think people like to laugh. You know, I was, as a producer and as the original creator, I definitely wanted drama. But I have to admit, I did not expect the type of drama, you know, that we had. Because I do think that, because we were all friends, like it was truly organic, that you have to have a no-fly zone. And sometimes people don't operate with the same moral compass that you may, you know, operate on. So that's, the cameras just change everything.
Let's talk about the cast of characters. Did you know all these people very, very well, or were there a couple thrown in the mix that you didn't know as well?
Oh, no, I casted everybody. Every single person on there, I casted. And, one of the doctors delivered my first daughter. The other one was, an associate of mine who was actually her best friend, the other doctor. Toya, her husband and my husband are both ER doctors for the same group. Carrie and I, you know, we just knew each other through the medical world and through philanthropy. Quad was my best friend, so it was my circle of, it literally was my circle of friends. Like, they weren't all friends, but they were all my friends, like, you know, in different, you know, friends in different circles, and I just brought them all together.
Ah, and then when different personalities get together, and we all know this, think of family reunions, think of different events at bars or different places, you're going to have conflict. People aren't going to always get along. It's going to happen.
Now you tell me. Yeah, you're right. It's good to keep some people separate. Now I understand why people do that. But you're absolutely right. And I think, honestly, it doesn't matter who you are, what you are. You get a group of women together, you're going to have some drama.
Yes.
And that's just real.
Absolutely. And so for our listeners out there that have not watched the show, because I know a lot, and I guess I'm learning on the fly in this specific situation, is they showed the lives of you and also the doctors in certain aspects, or more what the lives of the wives were?
I think that they show the lives of the doctors and the wives equally. And I think you actually see a lot of the doctors, and you see a lot of the doctors creating balance. You see a lot of the doctors in their practices, as well as with their own families. And I think that's very important because they have a lot of responsibility. So you see that. You see the wives with their husbands and their families. And you see us a little bit in our own, whether it's philanthropic efforts or work, you do get to see us in other elements. But I think it's basically us interacting with each other and with our families.
And that's a good thing in a lot of ways, because finally your goal is happening. You wanted to see people understand the lives of doctors and their wives, and that was something that was very, very important to you. And I'm sure you got feedback from people that also were married to doctors through Twitter and other types of social media, and you learned a lot about from them as well, right, across the country that you maybe didn't expect at first.
Yes, we have. We've had a tremendous feedback. The show was a phenomenon. We really, it truly catapulted. We broke Bravo's record for a freshman show that wasn't a spinoff, like hitting upward 2.7 million viewers. So we I'm extremely elated at the success of the show and the amount of people that have responded in a positive way to the show. I'm happy. I'm happy. I think that we had some good days and some bad days, but I think we're human. And I think overall it was just a very balanced cast. I do.
So what I want to do in the next segment is I want to talk about just the experience of being on TV. And as a journalist, okay. You've dealt with that. And I guess all the wives and the cast, how they got used to this, that the cameras were always watching them and the experiences of that. And then I guess also the feedback from the fans in a lot of ways as well. And I know that you can't tell us a lot of what's, and then you can tell us some of the upcoming projects you have and things like that, because I think that one of your also ultimate goals was that you can finally, as an entrepreneur and a lot of other entrepreneurs on the show, kind of get a bigger presence and to make a difference in people's lives, right? That's another goal of the show, that through this media, through this opportunity where you get a celebrity status, you can now change a lot of things and be able to make differences in a lot of people's lives, right? That was another goal of the show.
Well, I think if you're smart, you realize that this is not just a platform, it's a jumping board. And reality TV does not last forever. And I think the smart, savvy people learn to use this just as that, as a liaison to something else, jump to something else. And so that definitely is what my goal was the entire time. I always wanted to use this as, a jumping board to other things. I want to be a lifestyle brand, And so that's one of the things that I've been continuously working towards, doing that. And this show gives us the opportunity to do that. When you in so many households, then, people relate to you and they want to buy whatever you're selling.
Well, absolutely, Mariah. And I think that what you're able to bring to the table with that lifestyle brand, what an opportunity. And I guess talk about once the show aired and a lot. So there's a lot more to talk with Mariah Huck. So when we get back, we'll talk more of Mariah Huck. You're listening to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor Neil S. Haley, Facebook, and also the Beach Lifestyle Celebrity segment as well. Thanks to the Beach Lifestyle for connecting all this together. As I'm just trying to get back in the swing of things after Hilton Head, South Carolina, and I'm with Mariah Huck from Married to Medicine. And Mariah, so far, it just shows me that you really were ready for this opportunity. You prepared it, and that's how the creator and producers able to do things. But then I guess once you got behind the, got involved in front of the camera, was it a surprise to you? Did you have any media experience? I know you talked about you being a journalist. Was that more of a written, writing journalist, or also did you, were you in front of the camera before?
In front of the camera. I was actually a public affairs news anchor and producer for an NBC affiliate in Tennessee. So I did have TV experience, but it's just totally different. Network news and reality TV are two totally different monsters. So, you know, it just, I had experience. I think I was poised. However, you can't prepare for reality TV. You really truly can't.
And being the producer and creator of it, did a lot of them have to work on their, ability to be on television, to be able to relate in stories and different things like that, and their media training as well? Because I know that Bravo is big about that and the whole process. Were they all naturals, would you say?
I don't think they did. And honestly, it comes through on TV. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, you want to get people raw. You want to see people adjusting. You'll see the difference in the first episode than when you get to the eighth episode, because, you know, everybody got more acquainted with the cameras. And it is tough initially just to get used to having cameras in your house and when you're having a disagreement with your family. So I don't think anybody had media training per se. I just think the best training is going through it, practice. You know, the more you're on camera, the more you get comfortable with it. And I think that was the case with everyone.
Well, absolutely. And I think that what happens in the situation is we all get comfortable doing something. I started when I first started in radio, if I would listen to myself now, I'd say, oh my gosh, back then I wasn't even ready for it. It's experience. It's the ability. And I guess also to really connect and get used to this is how they're doing this, how they're filming this. So once you saw cameras all the time around you, Mariah, did it bug you at times? This whole reality thing in that way when they were filming and knowing
You know what? It never did. The beauty of being a part of a show that's an ensemble cast, you know, there's six people on our show. So I think at the time I would get irritated. It was time for them to go shoot someone else. So that worked out perfect for me and my family. You know, it's interesting enough, my 8-year-old, Lauren, she was the one who would say, oh, my God, they're here today again. Like, this, I'm over it. You know, so the kids sometimes got a little, you know, frustrated with it, you know. But I think, you know, overall, I was okay because I know I looked at it like a job.
Exactly, and especially when you wanted to grow your business through that opportunity and your brand. So you say, hey, we got to deal with some of the headaches that are involved. Now, how many children do you have, by the way, Mariah?
I have two. I have a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old, a son and a daughter.
How much did you have them involved in the show?
You know what? Ironically, I always thought I would not want them involved in the show, but I have to be honest, I totally changed my perception of that once I started filming, and I'm not sure if that was the right decision. After you see the entire season, you'll understand why, because I was the person that had issues, that the issue and the conflict that I had was involving one of my children, and it was a really big deal, and it affected us in a horrible way. But, you know, I did have them involved quite a bit because I wanted to show, as a minority, as an interracial, multicultural family, I thought it was very important for us to show the family perspective. I really, truly did. And, you know, the cultural perspective. My husband's from Bangladesh. You know, I'm from Chattanooga, Tennessee. We practice Eid, and we have Christmas. We eat macaroni and cheese and curry chicken. I call it Indian soul. So it was important for us to show people how we morphed our cultures together, and we couldn't do that without showing our children.
And in a lot of ways, and do you – what about when you watch other reality shows now, Mariah? Now, you don't have to, I'm not going to mention names of them. Do you think that it helped being the producer in a way to make sure that you could protect your children from real issues that could happen, especially if you're watching some of the reality?
No, it didn't. It didn't first season. I wish I could lie and say it did. It didn't first season, no. But I can guarantee it will moving forward. But it's not first season, no. Once you see the entire season, you'll understand. No, we dealt with a horrific situation on there. And, you know, my daughter, my 8-year-old, was affected by it terribly. So I felt horrible. I was very distraught. I was in conflict with one of the ladies that caused it. And, you know, so it was just a lot. And that was a lot of reason why I said, you know, you think people have a moral compass. And, you know, I became the target a lot because I was a producer. Even though I brought a lot of, I mean, every single one of the women on, you know, I kind of became the target. So I then understood why creators and producers stay behind the camera and not in front of it, because it's hard doing both of those roles.
Oh, I can't imagine what you did. I mean, because at times you're really frustrated. Now you have to film a person you want to kill. I mean, not kill, but meaning beat up or get angry at or have real resentment against. And especially if you're watching tweets and things going on during or just seeing the specifics and then the next. So I could just imagine it's such a challenge. And you sacrificed a lot this first season, for sure. Did it frustrate you also once the season did finally air? After all the filming happened and, you know, everyone's calm in certain ways, and then it finally comes on television, and the response through Twitter, the response through Facebook, did you feel, and now finally people are like, you know, paparazzi and all these different things. Was this just a rude awakening for you now that you are a celebrity? All these things that happen?
It happens overnight, I have to admit. You know, you go from having, you know, 700 followers on Twitter to 70,000 or 100,000. So, you know, you go from just having lunch with the kids and family to having lunch and taking, you know, 50 pics, you know, with someone in the restaurant. So it really truly, even though you feel like you try to prepare for it, nothing can truly prepare you for it, because you never really know what it feels like until you get into that position. And I think that's a part of the territory, but you know, it is tough. It is tough living, you know, being up under a microscope. Because some things you do want to be off, you know, off camera, out of respect for other family members and your children. So it was a rude awakening, but, I guess I expected some of it.
What I'm learning really quickly, Mariah, is I got involved in some tweets with the Housewives stuff because of some of the friends I'm on and then with the fans. But then I really see, I couldn't imagine being on a show and then you see Twitter flooding with these bloggers and these people, and they're constantly.
They will tear you up. You can't read the blog. Now I've heard that. You know, I heard people say, you know, I've heard other people, like other reality stars, told me early on that I knew you cannot read whatever you do, and you can't, because it will drive you crazy. So I don't read blogs. I don't read the blogs because it's, you know, blogs are going to be negative, and you have to expect that. So you do better off not reading it, because those kind of things really take a toll on your psyche.
And also the Twitter, like everyone tweeting live all the comments of you. And then if you ended up becoming the one that they all were ganging up on, like other shows, and I don't know all this. So this is, I guess it's good for you to know that in a way, because you could finally tell your true story in certain aspects. And I don't have any preconceived notions about you at all. The thing I see is that it's just really hurtful in certain aspects. And that's great that you got the advice you got, because if you see these things, you're like, oh my gosh, I want to tweet back.
Oh, I see them. Yeah. Now, let me be clear. I get a lot of Twitter hate mail and, you know, all kinds of things, because everybody's not going to love you. But I call, my husband jokes about it. He calls me the block queen, because I block people. Like, I block their tails. I block them as quick as I can. And if I see something negative, I just block them. I really, truly do. And, I move forward and just try to ignore it. But, you know, some of it is hurtful, but, you know, you just have to move past it.
So let's talk about the great experiences from the show. I did watch your interview in Atlanta on Atlanta television right before interviewing you, just to see how do you pronunciate your name, and then also the other and just the video of it. Tell me specifically what you think were the greatest pluses of this experience that you were able to bring to the table that provided great information for the audience and also your fans and stuff that you were able to bring awareness to. What would you say through the show?
I think breast cancer. I think, you know, really highlighting Dr. Jackie and her struggle with breast cancer and having a double mastectomy and having breast cancer twice and having beat it twice and, you know, being involved in the breast cancer walks and just seeing someone, how someone's life has been affected by this disease and they are still pushing through. And, I mean, it's the true word of, you know, perseverance. So I think that was the one of the most touching moments, you know, of the show. I think, you know, also from a personal standpoint, really highlighting, like I said earlier, a multicultural marriage. I think that opening up people to a different culture and a different world and teaching them and educating them on it, I think it's a beautiful thing.
And the feedback you got in both those aspects really made you proud of what you were doing, meaning this is stuff
Absolutely.
That, because a lot of times you could go back and look at the bad things in life. But if you look at all the good things that came of this, that's huge. So let's talk now about you. I mean, like I said, you could see I could talk to you for hours about all the different things, but let's talk about you and your upcoming projects, what you got out of the show that helps you with your branding and stuff like that. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the great thing for me is what you said is I've always intended on having this show. And before this show, my sister and I had a lifestyle bedding, kids bedding and decor line called Jewel and Jim. And we have kids pajamas and kids bedding. And we are getting ready to launch into several department stores. And we've been working on this for 4 years. I mean, well, she's been doing it for 8 years, but, you know, as a brand and having actual products, you know, we've been doing it for 4 years, so that's really huge. That should come out in the department stores early fall. And, you know, I'm working on an Indian Soul cookbook, and I'm excited about that as well. So, and there's a whole host of things that you can expect from Mariah, so I'm excited about a lot of the upcoming things I have coming out.
And then the book is a very important thing. And when is that looking to launch your cookbook?
So the book should be coming out in September, and it would be my Indian Soul cookbook. And it's going to be great. I mean, it's soul fusion mixed with Asian cuisine, and I think people really, really love it.
Well, you're going to have to come on the show to talk about your cookbook for sure, and we'll promote the cookbook and all that stuff. And then I know I'm going to have to, as we're talking off air, I'm going to have to catch up on the show. I'm sure that you're the, but you should say, okay, if a man's interviewing me and he's kind of an education show, maybe he didn't want watch Married to Medicine, but we're going to have to find this out. So you'll have to tweet me out or something and say, hey, Neil, this is when it's going to be re-airing again so I can watch it. So when I talk to you and catch up when the cookbook launches, you'll be saying, oh yeah, so now do you know a little bit more about me? It's kind of funny. I can't wait to watch Leah Black after I didn't know anything about Leah and Real Housewives of Miami at all either.
I love Leah. I love her.
She's a sweetheart. And then Mary Amons, a good friend of mine from D.C., I've still not watched any of the D.C. episodes, and then I probably would think of her in a different way. So, okay, Mariah, any news on, are you going to have another season? Is there any news on that?
We don't know yet. We haven't received the green light. You know, I mean, we're very hopeful. I think we are. I think it's very promising considering how successful of a run we had the first season. So that's another thing I'll tweet you about.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait to hear that. And so very, very interesting stuff you have going on. What is your ultimate goal, I guess, being a producer? Because now with the success, here's the thing that you're bringing to the table that lots of the housewives or reality stars aren't bringing, that now you're kind of creating a brand as a producer and creator. Do you have any ideas of ever producing or creating anything else?
Yes, I'm actually working on another project, and it's very similar to this one, and I'm extremely excited about it. It may be going to the logo channel. We're still working. It's a great opportunity, so you'll see a lot more of Mariah in the near future. You know, I love the success that Ryan Seacrest has had, and, you know, I really commend him, you know, for how well he's done, and I want to do something very similar to that.
Okay, fantastic, Mariah. Where can we find more information on you, learn more about you, and so our listeners can follow you and learn all what's going on with Married in Medicine? Where do you have a website? Do you have Twitter?
Yes,
give us all
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. They can find me at www.iluvmariah.com. And I'm also iluvmariah on Instagram as well as Twitter. And on Facebook, I am Mariah Huck. Last name is H-U-Q, Huck.
Well, fantastic. You're just really down to earth. And as a celebrity, to talk to you and just really get to know you and learn more about you. And I wish you all the luck in the world. I know you're going to be very successful and look forward to having you back once your cookbook's out. So thanks again for calling.
Thank you so much. Okay, you have a great day.
All right, take care, Mariah. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, you're listening to Toll Education Celebrity Show on the Toll Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Toll Education Celebrity Show on the Toll Education Network, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook. And you got to check out the Facebook always to see what's going on and also the Twitter, what celebrities I'm talking to. But our Beach Lifestyle Celebrity segment, I'm really excited to welcome to the program Lisa Chapman from Dog the Bounty Hunter and author and much, much more. Lisa, thanks for calling.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's just an absolute honor. And I'm to tell you, when I first saw that you were coming on the show, I remember the story. It just hit me. And I hardly watched that show. I'm not a huge reality fan, except my wife forces me to watch them. And now I'm become a Housewives fan and all these things. And now I'm interviewing all the reality stars. So I'm kind of like, I got to study this because they'll someday be on my show. But Lisa, when we were dealing with how you hit rock bottom, writing this story is such a great thing, and I'm so glad that you are pulling all the skeletons out of your closet so that you can help other people, and I think that's one of your ultimate goals of writing the book.
Right. Yeah, that's really what it's about. It's about giving back and helping other people. You know, bad things happen to good people all the time, and, you know, so often do we try to push it under the rug, or we just try to live our lives without, you know, facing what we did or what happened to us. And it's just time. I mean, it's time for America to really kind of change the way that we view young women. It's so hard for young women to grow up these days with media influences. And it's just, you know, sex and music and money is so portrayed so thickly, you know, to these young girls that it's time for someone to come out and show them what really happens if you go down that party lifestyle.
Exactly. And I kind of did it when I was a wrestler. And if I wouldn't have met my wife, I probably wouldn't have gotten grounded and became a teacher. So I understand completely stories and how and one of my tag team partners ended up down the road of drugs and really, but he reformed himself at one point in time, but he really had to hit rock bottom. So it's a very, very interesting thing that people could see that story. So kind of picture into the days growing up with your father, because I think that for our listeners out there, again, your dad's Dog the Bounty Hunter, and that basically at the beginning, before the reality show, life was hard for you as a child, wasn't it?
Yes. My parents divorced when I was two, and my mom left me and my older brother and sister to the care of my father, who already had two other kids, so he had five kids. And my mom pretty much just split. She kind of left my dad with all of us. And when we were 7 years old, my dad's mother passed away, my grandmother, and it really kind of sent him into a downward spiral. He got really hooked on drugs, and my older siblings were teenagers at the time. I was just 9 years old, kind of watching the behavior around me, you know, watching my dad get high. My brothers and sisters were partying like crazy. So it was just that was the only life that I really knew was the drug addict life.
And to be exposed to that early, what does that lead to? I mean, I think that when kids see things before they grow up, they're more likely to do it. They're going to do it, and they're going to think it with not even thinking about it. They're just going to do it, especially.
Yeah. It's just like religion. Like, if you're raised Catholic, you're Catholic. If you're raised Jewish, you're Jewish. I mean, if you're raised around a bunch of drug addicts, you become a drug addict. That's all you know. Buying, stealing, cheating, you know, using your body for things. I mean, it's just, it's a very surreal way to grow up. And a lot of people grow up that way these days.
And I think that that's the situation. So growing up, going to school, was your father wealthy at that time? Not at all, right? You were living in
No. That's bail bonds money. 1 week you're living like a king, and the next week you can't pay rent. But that's the life of a bail bondsman.
So tell us about childhood, especially going to school and the difficulties in school, and especially going to school. Was it in Hawaii you were going to school? correct?
Yeah. When I was in Hawaii, it was very bittersweet because it was a time for me to kind of forget everything that was going on at home. I got to hear stories from my friends about what their life was like with their mom and their dad and their dinners. And it was just very different for me. But it was hard for me because I was on an island and I was the only white girl in a class, you know, with Samoans and Asians and Pacific Islanders. So I was the only white girl in my school. And coming from Colorado to Hawaii was just a huge, huge culture shock. I didn't like the food. I didn't understand the talk. And most of all, I was just really treated badly by everyone around me. And it wasn't until I made a friend with the big Samoan girl who protected me every day that I actually not get beat up every day at school.
So bullying is probably also is something that touches you a lot as well, especially
I am, and
you're talking to me on my celebrity show, but I have an education talk show. Other education talk shows are primarily education based. And I am really an advocate to end bullying. And I think it's so important, and it really changes kids' lives in so many ways. So self-medication, you probably were depressed, Lisa. And the way to self-medicate yourself was through drugs.
Yeah, when I was 9 was when I started smoking pot. And then when my brothers and sisters left, when I got into my teenage years, my brothers and sisters left. So I was just, you know, really, really experimental. I was alone all the time. I didn't have my siblings anymore. And my dad was just, you know, locked in a closet all day, every day. So I started experimenting as much as I could. And then by the time I was 12, I got put on prescription medications, and I started using harder drugs. I started using cocaine and street drugs and just anything I could get my hands on. So, you know, by the time I was 15, I was, you know, a full-blown drug addict.
And I think that that's the hardest thing, is to really focus in school or do anything, right? Academically, it was hard. You cut class a lot, and were you a disruption in class, or was just you just never showed?
Not too much. I was actually a good student. When I went to school, I was actually a very good student. I did want to please my peers, you know, so I would put on a really good face. I would do my homework, do whatever I could so that I could just get out and not have to worry about people, you know, telling me what to do. So I pretty much was very easy to get along with the older adults in my life. I had been around adults the whole time. I didn't really have kids around me, so I was able to manipulate people very well. And I got pregnant when I was 14. So by the time I was in 9th grade, I dropped out of school. So I never even graduated high school. I was out by 10th grade.
So you were the school of hard knocks. But let's go to the relationship with your dad at that time when you were with drugs and different things like that. Did your dad turn around his life at that point, or was it still a lot of chaos in the whole family at that point?
When I was about 12, I completely cut my dad out of my life. I went and I lived with my mom, so I just cut him out of my life. I didn't like the drugs. I didn't like the screaming and the fighting and everything, so I just cut him out of my life. I went and lived with my mother, and I told him, you know, I'm done with you in my life, and I thought things would be much better with my mom than they were with my dad. And he never really kind of, like, checked back on me, you know. He didn't really, I guess he had his hands full with what was going on with his life, so...
So kind of, and the reason I'm jumping in this picture is that you're 14 now, you're pregnant, you're not really talking to your father.
No.
When he finally had the success of his reality show, did you know about it at first? Did it come up, or did it just somehow in passing how you guys?
No, I had no idea. You know, fast forward 2 years, I have a 2-year-old baby. I am living in my car. I'm homeless. And I hear, you know, through the grapevine or something, you know, I didn't have access to cable, obviously. So I hear, you know, your dad has a TV show and something about Andrew Lester in Mexico. And I just started calling him. I just started calling him over and over. I called the bail bond line. I called his assistant. I called one of the kids, you know, anyone who would answer me. I just called and started asking him for help.
No, what was his response at first when you did reach out?
They wouldn't even take my call. They were just like, oh, God, not Lisa. You know, and they just, you know, completely ignored me. And then once they realized I wasn't going to give up, they had an opening. They needed some help with taking care of their younger kids, and they bought me a ticket. And literally, I called one day, and the assistant said, your dad bought you a ticket. You're coming in next week. And it completely changed my life. I had gone from being, you know, this drug addict, baby dropout, homeless girl, to being Dog Bounty Hunter's daughter literally overnight. And it was just a complete, again, culture shock.
I mean, it sounds like a culture shock. And would you say, how did your dad change from that time when you first were living with him till later? And I'm sure all this stuff is in the book, and definitely people are going to have to pick up the book to learn a lot more. But I'm just so intrigued by this story. Because, again, a lot of times when the father's not involved, and he wasn't because he was involved in drugs as well, and busy caught up in his business, girls really look at the role model of the father, especially in the teen years or 12, 13, 14. And he wasn't there for you. So that you looked at people that you had relationships in based on what your father was like at that time. When you finally got back with him, how did he change? And were you surprised by that change a lot?
I don't think it was really a change that I was looking for. I think it was just an opportunity for us to both get to know each other again. We hadn't been in each other's lives in so long. The dad that I knew, and the daughter that he knew were far, far gone. So it really took a lot of us building in our relationship, which we still do every day. It's hard, especially as you become an adult and you're looking at your parents and you want to be angry. You're like, well, why didn't you do this? And why didn't you go to my parent-teacher conference? And why? You know, it's a very hard situation, so we just work on it every single day. Families have more drama than relationships do. You know that. I mean, it's hard with families, and they're the only ones you got, so you just got to try to stick it out. And I love my father with all my heart. I do. And I'm not upset about things that happened in the past. I feel like the thing that needs real attention here is the drug, and that the drug was controlling his mind. The drug was the thing that, took over him completely. I mean, you can give Super Nanny a hit of crack. She's not going to be the best Super Nanny anymore.
No,
is she?
No, not at all.
So I don't really think that he changed as a father. I think that he just is able to recognize the mistakes that he made and just move forward from that. You know, we don't try to dwell on the past. We just move forward in our relationship.
So you both were able to fight addiction, which is a very challenging thing. So was he sober by the time you went back and connected with him or not?
Oh, yes.
Oh, he was.
Yes.
And did,
my dad rarely even drinks to this day. He's like, if he drinks, he's got Indian blood in him and he's on the floor.
So I think what you learned from this process is that he was part of that help for you to get a recovery, because he was able to defeat this. And that's where I said the difference of him, because he was probably the same person till he got high. Right. Because
you're
not high 24 hours a day. At certain times you go do that. And the stress of his job probably led to the addiction, because he had to have something from what he saw every day as a bail bondsman, and the danger and the challenges, and the challenges of taking care of a family as well. So that's where I was asking about the changes. Would you say that he changed, not seeing him high? Was that a surprise to you in a lot of ways once you finally connected? That's the kind of question I was meaning. Yeah. Not the father, because I know what a father-daughter relationship, you're always going to say, well, my father was there for me at times. But once he got high, he said, forget you. Just like when you got high, you said, forget my dad. So that was the change, not seeing him high. That just surprised you a lot, but you were still suffering lots of addiction at that point in time.
Right. And it was hard to figure out where to pick up from there. You know, I mean, I'm 17. I have a daughter whom he's never met before. I mean, we obviously don't go to the zoo. You know, he's not going to take me to the amusement park. So it was a kind of awkward to try to rebuild that relationship. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
How did it bond?
Your story is so amazing, Lisa. And I have so many questions. And that's why my listeners need to go ahead and pick up your book. Because I'm just telling you, it's an amazing story. You're really looking to help others. And I find that just awesome. And I'm looking forward to part two next month, so we can kind of go into more about the story. Because all we've talked about is the suffering, the hardships, the difficulties, the bullying, the drugs, the relationship for father and daughter. But now how you guys get back together and you overcome your addiction to be a successful star on TV for a bit, and then how you've moved on in your career to maybe becoming a superstar. So that's the ultimate goal. And to look at when you were at rock bottom, Lisa, and I saw it on television, and I saw your dad's pain, and to talk to you today, because I missed the whole storyline. I'll have to, I bet you Netflix or certain places like that, I could catch up with this. I want to find out the story more and more to get to know you. Because every person I interview, Lisa, I develop this connection mm-hmm. with, and I want to learn more about them, even if I don't know a lot, and to have that opportunity. So, Lisa, where can we purchase your book and learn more about you?
My book is online and available in stores everywhere, and you can go to my website, lisachapman.net also.
Fantastic, and best of luck. I'm really proud of you, and I think you're a great role model for others that are suffering through
Thank
addiction.
Thank you so much. You're such an amazing, you had great questions. It just blew me out of the water.
And
Thank
guess what?
So
here's one thing, Lisa, to tell you. I have them all in my head. I might have a gift as interviewing people. So I don't know, because I just listen to people. But Lisa, you're fantastic. Look forward to. Do you have a Twitter, by the way, also, or anything?
Yes, I'm at Baby Lisa C.
All right, I'll be tweeting you out, and I want our listeners to tweet you out, and we'll definitely talk next month. So take care.
Thank you. Aloha.
Aloha to you too. This is Neil Haley. You're listening to Toll Education Celebrity Show on the Toll Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Toll Education Celebrity Show on the Toll Education Network, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook. And the celebrities keep rolling on. I had a little break in Hilton Head, South Carolina. Now I'm back doing interviews, and I just love it. And my kids are going to get a kick out of this one. I want to welcome the program celebrity Lisa Jacob from Mrs. Doubtfire and Independence Day. Lisa and author, thanks for calling, Lisa.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to talk to you.
Well, I'm excited to talk to you as well, especially the process of being a child actor, because I know that my daughter, who's 8, might want to get involved in entertainment, and maybe some of my other kids, especially me being in the entertainment field and making the connections in Hollywood and different things to consider what you had to go through as a child actor. So tell us specifically the story a little bit about how you became a child actor.
Sure. Well, I started acting when I was very young. I was 4 years old when I started doing commercials. And it was kind of one of those weird stories. I am Canadian. I lived outside of Toronto. And I was in a mall with my parents when I was 4. And there was a guy who was producing a commercial that he thought I would be perfect for. So he gave my parents his card and wanted them to call, and it kind of all snowballed from there.
Wow.
So I started doing commercials. Yeah. I started doing commercials, going out on auditions, and then eventually moved into doing guest stars on television shows. And then when I was about 11, I started going to Los Angeles and auditioning for projects out there, and then started doing more television shows, movies, and it all just kind of happened.
Wow. And so your parents decided to move out there once they saw that you were going to be successful at this, right? It sounds like.
We never moved as a family. We really tried to keep a home base in Toronto. So I would go back and forth to Los Angeles or go back and forth to wherever the location might be for the shoot. But we really tried to keep Canada as kind of a grounding place for me. So it wasn't like I uprooted my whole family and we moved. There was just a lot of flying across the country that happened.
So back and forth during your childhood and through that process, again, schooling was different for you than lots of other kids then, right? It sounds like it's going to be.
Absolutely. I did most of my schooling with tutors on set. I did some homeschooling, and then when I wasn't working, I would go to a regular school. But that got increasingly less common as I worked more. But there are rules about working on set when you're a child as far as school goes. So you have to have 3 hours per day for schooling. And I have some really great set tutors who were really devoted and very good at helping young actors balance work and school.
So the process when you knew, I guess, that you're different than everyone else, when you would be in school, did you have your big break by that point? Did they know, like, especially when we're talking about Mrs. Doubtfire, did you have your big break in that people are saying, oh, my gosh, I know who you are? Or did you, when you weren't going to school, they just knew you were an actor, but they didn't really know what parts you played in. What would you say?
It was a little bit of both. I was just starting high school when I did Mrs. Doubtfire. So before that, kids knew I was an actor because I would be gone for months at a time, and then I would kind of reappear. But once I hit high school, I think I did maybe 2 weeks of grade 9 before I left for several months to film Mrs. Doubtfire. And clearly that changed a lot because I was much more recognizable after that. So it was always a balancing act, trying to figure out how to do both and go back to, you know, a quote-unquote normal school and be a normal kid.
Here's the question I have to ask, Lisa, in a lot of ways. Was Mrs. Doubtfire your big break, would you say, that kind of put you on the map as an actress?
I guess most people would say that that was true. I think as far as recognizability goes, everything did change after Mrs. Doubtfire. It was a hugely popular movie, and I had that crazy long hair, so everybody noticed that first. I think definitely life got a little different after Mrs. Doubtfire.
And I saw your bio on Twitter, and it said basically two things, Mrs. Doubtfire, then Independence Day. But were there other films that our listeners out there would have heard of that you were in after Mrs. Doubtfire? You said Independence Day's one of them. We could talk about specifically that. Was that when you were in high school, or were you in college by that point? I mean, were you done from high school when you were in Independence Day?
Independence Day was after Doubtfire, so I was a little older. I might have been 17, 18 at that point. But I also did Rambling Rose. That was when I was 11. That was with Robert Duvall, Diane Ladd, and Laura Dern. That was a wonderful experience. It's a great little movie, not quite as notable as Doubtfire was as far as recognizability, but it was a really great film, actually. Diane Ladd and Laura Dern both got nominated for Oscars, which was interesting because it was the first time that a mother-daughter duo had been nominated for the same film.
Oh, wow. So you were involved in some very interesting films, and throughout that process, there's always work. I've talked to many actors that what happens once you get a big one, it's very easy for your agent to pitch you to get another audition. And then it just leads from there to becoming a working actor. So at that point in high school, after Mrs. Doubtfire, were you not traveling as much back to Canada because you were having a lot of work? Would you say that's when it really kind of exploded work-wise, would you say, right after that?
Yeah, I think I definitely was working more. I would try to always go back to Canada just because I found that to be very grounding. But it was definitely getting harder to live that Canadian life that I loved so much, that was simple and quiet because I was working more.
And you're one of those, there are a lot of Canadian actors and actresses that have been very successful to come to the States, but they always want to go back to Canada because it's more laid back, right? Especially Hollywood. That must be a complete difference from dealing with Toronto and Hollywood. Must be just tremendous culture shock in certain ways when you first went there, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They're very different places, and I think I loved that. I loved having that contrast in my life.
So after in the story, I wanted to ask a couple other questions, but I'm kind of leading you in a story based on the answers of the questions. I'm kind of going into what's happened in life after acting. So you did some more acting, and then you decided, which is a very surprising thing, because I talk to them all the time. It's such a passionate thing to be an actor. And then to say, I'm going to retire, especially when you're young still, it was a hard decision when you decided I'm going to hang it up for now?
It definitely was a difficult decision. But I think I realized that I didn't really have that passion that you were just speaking of. A lot of my friends who were actors did have that passion. I saw it around me every day. People that would give up anything to do this job. I liked my job. For the most part, I had a good time doing it. It was fun. I got to travel and meet interesting people. But after working for 18 years, I realized that I didn't have that deep longing to be an actor anymore. And that's a very difficult realization when you are a working actor, when you have what other people think you should want.
Exactly.
And you realize you don't really want it anymore.
And
so that was a very difficult realization to come to figure out, well, what do I do now? Because I didn't graduate from high school. I started working so much, I just wasn't able to finish high school. I had not gone to college. I wasn't sure what else I was capable of doing. I had no plan B. I had no fallback. I was too busy working to come up with what I would do when I wasn't working. So that was a very difficult time for me, but I realized that life is short and
yes.
that I didn't want to keep on doing a job just because I had done it since I was 4 years old. I wanted to be more responsible for my life and its past than that.
And I think that's a mature decision you made. And and when you talk about you could be working full time as an actor, and a lot of people wish they could have that opportunity and the talent, you decided I want more in life. And a lot of people, if you don't have the passion, you shouldn't stay in it. And when you made that decision, life after acting must have been difficult at first, you said, because you didn't have a backup plan. You didn't have anything. You just said, it must have been one day you just said, you know what, I want to do something else. And that's pretty much what you probably did.
Yeah. Yeah. One, there were many factors. This is never a simple decision that somebody comes to just immediately. It's messy, and there were lots of factors that went into it. But one thing that was very, kind of opened my eyes, was I was considering leaving all through 2001. 9/11 happened, and I started going to auditions at movie studios where there was massive security, and there would be bombs, sniffing dogs all around my car, and guys crawling underneath to see if there were bombs, and film studios were very tense places at that point. And I realized I don't want to die doing this job. I realized that nothing is guaranteed.
Yes.
And so that was a big realization for me. And I left Los Angeles in December of 2001.
And had to pick up the pieces. And what's amazing is this is only part one of this, Lisa. We're going to have to book you next month to kind of get into this more. But very, very interesting story. And something that I see that it takes a lot of guts to do this. And I'm going to give you a quick storyline of myself. I was a professional wrestler, and I was in one of the peak of my career. I was in Germany, which could have led to the WWF, and I just decided I want to hang it up. I don't want to go. I want to have a family. This is not the place for a family. And I stopped. And it was one of the hardest decisions I ever made in my life. But looking back, somehow it led me back into the entertainment field later on in my career through teaching. So you never know when you will be back again. I had a conversation with another actress who decided, I'm going to raise my kids and do all this stuff, then come back into the business. So the business will always be there for you. It's just a time where I'm retiring now to pursue other things, and I can't wait to hear more of the story. But for our listeners that can't wait till part two of our interview, where can we find information on you and purchase your book and learn more about you, Lisa?
So Well, of course I am on Facebook and Twitter because you have to be on Facebook and Twitter. And you can check out my website, which is at www.lisajacob.net. Jacob is spelled a little strangely. It's J-A-K-U-B. And then you can find my Facebook and Twitter from there as well.
Well, Lisa, I'm going to schedule you for next month, and it's very easy to deal with you because I can just reach out to you and get it booked. I like that. That makes it an easy process, and love to hear more about this story because it's a very, very interesting story. And it kind of parallels my story in certain aspects because I did the same thing. I kind of got off the stage for a while, but then I came back. But again, I was in it for about almost the same time as you were in acting, close to, and I miss it at times, but it was one of the greatest decisions I made because I grew so much. So thanks for calling, and I'm looking forward to hearing more about your story. So thanks for calling again.
Thank you so much.
All right, take care, Lisa. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye. You're listening to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment.